Now, we're holding on to Nunches on the base, the second line from the bottom. We started discussing yesterday, Rabbi Yochanan had said that Rabbi Yochanan had understood Rabbi Yossi to be saying that the Mizbeach is located entirely in the northern half of the Azara. At first we thought that he learns that from our Mishnah, where Rabbi Yossi says that if you shecht kodshe kodshim anywhere on top of the Mizbeach, then b'dievet it's okay, because the entire Mizbeach is in the northern half, and therefore you're shechting and suffering. We said that no, actually, it's based on a drasha of a pasuk. However, it is true that Rabbi Yossi holds that the Mizbeach is entirely in the northern half of the Azara. So we went through a whole discussion. Rabbi Zeira had brought a Mishnah from Tamid that talks about the place where they had the Ma'aroch HaShniya Shav Torah, the second wood pile and the second fire on the Mizbeach from which they would take coals to burn the Torah. And they would also burn the Shnei Bezichel of Oina of the Lechem upon him there. And we were discussing at great length about how does this Mishnah tell us exactly where the Mizbeach was located, and therefore exactly where they had to place that Ma'arachim. Yeah?
Now, the same question.
Yeah.
The Psukim in Ma'iko, talk about the Mishkan. So the same thing happened in the Mishkan.
As much as possible.
Where the Mizbeach was.
As much as possible, we assume that what it says in the Torah about the Mishkan is going to apply in the Beis Mikdash as well. Not all of them, of course. I mean,
you're saying the Mishkan was also always situated in a way that Mizbeach Ma'arot Zachandah, and Mishkan was always...
So yeah, you always had the Kodesh Kedoshim was always towards the west, the Mizbeach was always with the Kevesh of it towards the south, and so on and so forth. Yeah, all of that relative position was the same. The Mizbeach, as we're going to talk about later, was smaller. And you have a number of other differences, but yeah, also these dinim that we're talking about, the here, now, the Gemara is going to learn from Sukkim, the dinim about where the kiyur is supposed to be placed relative to the Mizbeach, that was in the Mishkan, and it continues to be that way in the Beis Mikdash as well.
Smaller scale.
On a larger scale in the Beis Mikdash. Okay, so we were saying, so far then we had as follows. Rabbi Zeira was trying to prove that Mishnah necessarily is like Rabbi Yossi, and that from what it says about the position of the Ma'aroch HaShniya Shav Torah, we can deduce that Rabbi Yossi holds the entire Mizbeach was in the northern half. Otherwise, we didn't have a good explanation why the Ma'aroch HaShniya had to be davka there, exactly 4 amos away from the southern end of the Mizbeach. However, then the Gemara said that's not a proof, because instead, the Mishnah could be according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Mizbeach is exactly in the middle, and we worked out that exactly centered between north and south, and the Gemara had worked out how, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that same positioning of the Ma'aroch HaShniya Shav Torah would work as well. Okay. So now the Gemara says another possibility. Reb Shrevya says another possibility. So far we have, again, we said that Mishnah in Tamid could be according to Rabbi Yossi, and it would demonstrate that Rabbi Yossi holds that the Mizbeach has to be all in the north. Or it could be like Rabbi Yehuda, and he says that the Mizbeach was in the middle, and we could make it work according to him. For that matter, the Gemara had pointed out, we could equally well within that say it was according to Rabbi Yossi. However, we find Rabbi Yehuda explicitly saying the Mizbeach is in the middle. So in other words, according to that second possibility, there's no proof necessarily from that Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi holds the Mizbeach is in the north. And now the Gemara says another possibility, Rabbi Shrevya or Mahamani Rabbi Yossi Agrivi. Rabbi Shrevya says another possibility is that this Mishnah in Tamid about the positioning of the Ma'aroch HaShniya Shav Torah may be according to Rabbi Yossi Agrivi. Now, Rabbi Yossi Aglili is not the same as regular Rabbi Yossi. Regular Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Yossi ben Chalasta. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we had the other day that the first time he came to the Beis Medrash, and he had a whole discussion in Torah with Rabbi, and he was able to stump from Tarfin, and then Rabbi Akiva answered him, and they had a Macholikas. So his father's name, as far as I know, we don't know. Rabbi Yossi regular is Rabbi Yossi ben Chalasta. Anyway, so now Rabbi Shrevya says that Mishnah could well be appointed Rabbi Yossi Aglili, as we're going to work out that Rabbi Yossi Aglili would also hold that the Mizbeach is in the north. So in that case, again, you wouldn't have a proof from that Mishnah of what Rabbi Yossi ben Chalasta holds. So it could be like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. D'tanya, we learn in Braisa. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, mitoch shenema v'nasata sakir ben oyomayit v'goymer. The pasuk says, as far as the kir, the basin from which the kohenim would wash their hands and feet before the avoda, earlier in the Masechta, we talked about in some detail the dinim of how they have to wash their hands and feet, and that if they don't do it, the avoda is possible, and so on and so forth. So where is the kir located? The pasuk says, between the oyomayit, meaning between the main building of the Mishkan, and later the Beis Mikdash and the Mizbeach. Bein Oyel Moed or Bein HaMizbeach. So now the Pasuk also says when Moshe actually set it up, the Eis Mizbach HaOla v'Gomer, that the Mizbeach HaOla Moshe put in front of the door of the Oil Mordid. So we learn from that, says Rabbi Yisrael Levi, Mizbeach Pesach Oil Mordid v'Loi Kiyur Pesach Oil Mordid. It means that Mizbeach is located directly in front of, is located someplace in front of the door of the Oil Mordid. And again, it may be to the north, it may be to the south. That's the point that we're discussing right now. But the point is v'Loi Kiyur Pesach Oil Mordid, the Kiyur is not to be in front of the Pesach Oil Mordid, meaning in other words, it can't be directly between the Mizbeach and the Oil Mordid. It has to be that the Mizbeach is in front of the door without anything else in between. So how do we reconcile those two psukim? Heichan Hoya Nosne, where do they actually place the kiyur then? Beino Ulam Velo Mizbeach, they placed it between the, in the Bais Hamikdash, between the Ulam, the entryway of the Heichal, and the Mizbeach. However, Moshuch Kima Klapei Adorim, however, it wasn't directly in the middle, it was offset to the side. So therefore, so now it's not literally between the Oyo Morid and the Mizbeach, it's only in the space where you have the strip of 22 amos between the Mizbeach and the Oyo Morid, in this case the Ulam, and it was in that strip, but not directly between the Mizbeach and the front of the Heichal. Tosfos, by the way, brings up the point that the Kohenim are not allowed to go Beina Ulam Vela Mizbeach in this area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach has a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of the Azara, and they're not allowed to go in there without washing their hands and feet. So how are they able to go in there to the Kiyur in the first place to wash their hands and feet? So Tosfos first says, first of all, there is an opinion of Rav Meir that says they could go in. However, Gulyan Ashas, Rav Akiva Eger, asks on that we're talking over here according to Rav Yossi, and he holds that you can't go into Beino Ulam Vela Mizbeach without Rechitzas Yedayim Raglayim. So there's quite a bit of discussion. There's question on what's Rabbi Akiva Eger's problem. If we're saying over here that the Kiyur is not in fact between the Oyel Morid and the Mizbeach, it's offset to one side. So fine, you don't walk between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. You walk around the other side. You go to the Kiyur and you're good. So one possibility is that maybe he means that entire strip of 22 amos has the same din, regardless whether it's the actual part between the Mizbeach and the Oyel Morid, or whether it's north or south of that. In any case, one answer is in fact that din is maybe only Dirabbanan, and therefore, since they have to go in there in the morning to do Kiddush HaDayim Raglayim, then therefore the Chacham overrode that and said that they're allowed to. But later on in the day, they tackle wouldn't be allowed to, but Pashas, then the answer would be somebody would have to bring them water and a Kli Shoris from the Kiyur, and they would wash someplace else outside of that area. But in the morning, they could go into that area. Again, one answer that's given is that the Keren Ora, I think, says is that Isser was only Dirabbanan, and therefore in the morning for them to physically be able to do Kiddush HaDayim Raglayim, and the Chacham didn't impose that rule. Anyway, so now that Rabbi Yisrael really is saying that the Kiyur cannot be directly between the Mizbeach and the front of the Heichal, the Ulam, it has to be offset to the side. So now, based on that, says Rabbi Sherevia, we can demonstrate, again, by process of elimination, like we did yesterday, that Rabbi Yisrael really necessarily must necessarily hold that the Mizbeach is entirely in the northern half of the Azara. Because, Rabbi Shlevi says, Ma'ika Sagar. Because what would we say, what would Rabbi Yosef really hold in terms of the three possibilities that we said so far, all in the south, all in the north, or exactly in the middle? If he holds the entire Mizbeach is in the southern half of the, is in the southern half of the Azara, so then all we need to do is, we don't need to have the Kiyur so far offset. We place it someplace south of the wall of the Heichal, and then, so in other words, the question then is, he's saying that the Kiyur is not supposed to be Pesach Oyel Morid, and therefore it has to be offset. But if he holds the Mizbeach is entirely in the north, meaning that he doesn't have a problem with the Kiyur being between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, so then fine. So all we have to do is replace it. We don't have to offset the Kiyur that much. We place it directly. We have, as we learned yesterday, the door of the Heichal is 10 amos wide. So you have, and the, so, so, so you, and then you have, And then you have, outside of that, you have the Ulam, which is 20 amos wide. So you have a difference of 5 amos between the edge of the door, between the southern edge of the door of the Heichal and the southern edge of the door of the Ulam. So fine, you place the Kiyah right outside that. It's a little bit in front of the entrance of the Ulam. It's not in front of the entrance to the Heichal. And then you're good. Then the Kiyah is not in front of Pesach or Moed, and it can still be between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. So that would be fine. We don't have to say that the Mizbeach is in front of Oyo Moed and the Kiyah is not, and because of that the Kiyah has to be offset. The E Nami Kasava Kadushas Heichal Ulam Chodehi, even if Rabbi Yossi holds, as we've been discussing, the possibility in the Sugya that maybe he holds the Ulam and the Heichal have the same Kadusha, so fine, you have to offset it another 5 Amos. Nokmi Mikosa Ulam Veladorim, so then fine, all you need to do is place the Kiyah directly in front of the southern wall of the Ulam. So you have the 20 amma wide entrance of the Ulam. You place the Kiyah directly south of that, right by the edge, so that the edge of the Kiyah is by the edge of the wall over there. So it can't be, therefore, the fact that Rabbi Yisrael really says it has to be south of the Mizbeach. So if he held the Mizbeach was entirely in the northern half, then there's no reason to place it south of the Mizbeach. It could be between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, or even between the Mizbeach, according to the first possibility, between the Mizbeach and it could be on the other side of it is the entryway of the Ulam, and we'd still be good. So obviously, Rav Yosef really then cannot hold that the Mizbeach is all in the southern. It's all in the southern half of the Azara. Next, Inami Kasava Chetzi B'Tzofen V'Chetzi B'Dorim. If Shrebra continues, if Rabbi Yosef really had held that the Mizbeach is exactly in the middle, half of it is in the north and half of it is in the south, then again, he doesn't have to have it offset so that it's not between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. Nukmin the Kosel Heichav Aladorim Ben Ulam La Mizbeach. You could still place it. It could still be in the same position as in the first possibility, directly by the edge, position so that the edge of it is exactly parallel to the end of the southern side of the door of the Heichal. Same idea. In other words, it would be you'd have the Mizbeach, then you'd have the Kiyah, then it would be in front of part of the entryway of the Ulam, but it wouldn't be in front of the door of the Heichal, because again you have those 5 amos of wall over there. So if you drew a straight line, you would have it. You'd start from someplace in the middle of the Mizbeach, you'd skim the edge of the Kiyah, you'd go into the entryway of the Ulam, a couple of amos away from the edge, and then you'd exactly get to the southern doorpost of the Heichal. And that should be fine. If you said the Mizbeach is in the southern, is exactly centered on the north-south line. And then there'd still be no reason for him to say that the Kiyah is offset and it's not between the Mizbeach and the Ulam at all. And again, Vinami Kasavar Dushas Ha'ulam V'Heichal Chodehi. And again, if he held that the Ulam and the Heichal have the same Kedusha, and that therefore if the Torah tells us that the Kiyah can't be Pesach Oyer Moed, then it has to be someplace in that area, but not exactly Pesach Oyer Moed, then we have to offset another 5 Amos. So fine, Nokmi because the Ulam, Beladorim, Ben Ulam Ulam is there. So then fine, we place it a few Amos further south, again, like in the previous possibility, so that the edge of it is exactly align with the edge of the doorpost of the Ulam. And again, Rabbi Yosef Lili is not saying that. Rabbi Yosef Lili is saying that the Kiyah is entirely offset from the Mizbeach. It's not between the Mizbeach and the wall at all. So therefore, so of necessity, evidently, it must be Rabbi Yosef Lili holds the entire Mizbeach is in the northern half of the Azara. And therefore, when we place the Kiyah to the south, then yes, of necessity, it's not going to be between the Mizbeach and the door. Of necessity, it's going to be offset a little bit. So the edge of the Mizbeach, the southern edge of the Mizbeach, if you drew a line from there, will exactly skim the edge of the Kiyah. So that would explain that why he says that the Kiyah is Moshe Kima, Klapei HaTzofen, Klapei HaDorim, is offset a little bit towards the south. So wouldn't that show then, says Rabbi Shrevia, that Rabbi Yosef really holds the entire Mizbeach as in the north? So again, even if we wanted to understand the Mishnah and Talmud about the Ma'aroch HaShnia and its positioning, even if we wanted to understand it according to an opinion that places the Mizbeach entirely in the north, that opinion doesn't necessarily have to be Rabbi Yosef. Ben Chalakta, Rabbi Yosef Stam, it could be Rabbi Yosef really. Okay, the Gemara asks, still, within Rabbi Yosef Lula's opinion, why, after all, according to him, do we have to have the Kiyo completely offset from the Mizbeach? Why don't we place the Kiyo in the northern half of the Azara? Why is Rabbi Yossi insisting that the Kiyo cannot be between the Mizbeach and the Oil Moed, and therefore he said and the Ulam, and therefore he has to offset it a little bit? Instead, let it just be on the northern side, and what's the problem? The answer is, So it'll still be in this Bein Olam Mizbeach area. And the answer is Amakrot Safoina, because the Pasuk says Safoina, that you shecht Korbanos in the north, and we learn from that it could have said Safoina, instead it said Safoina. So we learn from that she had Safon Ponui Mikalin. We learn from that that Safon, the northern half of the Azara, has to be empty of Kalin. And the Kiyor is a Kaili, so therefore it's not supposed to go in the northern half, so therefore there's no choice for it to go in the southern half. And Rabbi Yossi is doushening the Pesukim to say that it was not between the Mizbeach and the Oyo Moed at all, because the implication of the Pesuk, again, was that only the Mizbeach is directly in front of the door of the Oyo Moed. The Kiyor is not, and therefore that necessitates him to say that the Kiyor is a little bit offset to the south. It can't be north because of this Ponu Yukalim. Tosfos points out that the Mizbeach itself is a Kaili, and yet according to Rabbi Yosef really was saying over here, it's in the north. That's fine, because what we mean is of other Kalim, the only Kaili that should be in the north is the Mizbeach. Now, in the Bis Mikdash, there were other things in the north as well. They had the rings that were in the floor. They had the tables. They had to cut up the korbanos. They had the pillars with the hooks from which they would hang the korbanos to skin them. All of those were north of the Mizbeach. Tosfos says that's not the problem. When the Torah says she hates stuff and ponim kalim, means you shouldn't have any kalim over there that are not related to the shchita and the preparation of the korban. The kiyor is necessary because the kohenim have to wash their hands and feet with it before they do the avodah, but it's not directly related to the bringing of the korban, and therefore the pasuk is saying that it can't be in the north. But the Mizbeach. But not only the Mizbeach, according to the opinion that it's in the north, but the tables and the pillars and all of that, those can very well be in the north. That's no problem, because those are all needed for the shechting and the preparation of the korbanos. So that explains Rabbi Yosef Aglili's opinion. So yes, we can say then that Rabbi Yosef Aglili holds the entire Mizbeach within the north, and therefore so you don't necessarily have to say, as Rabbi Zeira had said in yesterday's daf, that the Mishnah in Talmud about the positioning, so now going back to that Mishnah in Talmud and the positioning of the Ma'aroch HaShnia Shel Ketores, now we have a second opinion that says the Mizbeach is in the north, and he could very well be the author of the Mishnah in Talmud that describes the place of the Ma'aroch HaShnia Shel Ketores, and as the Gemara had worked out yesterday, it has to be placed after there in order to be in front of the door. We want it as it's going to be as close as possible to the southern end of the Mizbeach, but it has to be a few amos in order to be in front of the door. So the Gemara says, Man Tana de Poligale de Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Fine. Which Tana is it that disagrees with Rabbi Yosef Aglili and says the Mizbeach is not entirely in the suffering? So the answer is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That second opinion is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Aymer, Safoina, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov uses the same word, Safoina, and then darshans it, but he says, she hates Safon poni miklum. It means that Safon should be empty of everything. Rashi points out, before we had in Rabbi Yosef Levi's Jerusha, the word was mikalim, that it should be empty of kalim. Here instead, the correct Yosef, as we have it in the Gemara, is miklum, it should be empty of everything. Even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says of the Mizbeach. So according to him, the entire Mizbeach has to be in the southern half of the Azara, otherwise you don't have the complete Safon empty of anything. Tosfos points out that there's a relevant Gemara in Yuma that that discusses also the positioning of the Mizbeach and brings a relevant Mishnah from Nidos in that connection, which describes the layout of the Azara and the disposition of the space, and the Gemara establishes there that the entire Midas is according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and there it seems to say that not, but the Mizbeach was not completely in the southern half, but was partially in the northern half. So how that would fit together, Tosfos leaves the question open. The Rambam also, when the Rambam brings the blueprint of the Mizmikdash, he basically follows the Mishnah in Midas, and the result is most of the Mizbeach is in the southern half, but there's a few amas of it sticking out into the north. But basically, in the Gemara, at least, we have three opinions. We have Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying it was entirely in the south. We have Rabbi Yehuda and maybe Rabbi Yossi, where we have Rabbi Yehuda saying that it's exactly in the middle. And we have Rabbi Yossi, really saying that it's in the north. And Rabbi Yochanan had told us that he learned from his Rebbeim that Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta agrees with that as well and places the Mizbeach entirely in the north. As we discussed yesterday, in practice, in the Beis Hamikdash, how was it? It must have been according to one of those opinions, because the Mizbeach was actually built into the ground. It's not like they can move it around. But for Pashkus, we can say the Machlokas is what is the ideal way to do it, but they might all agree that it's kosher according to the other opinions as well. New discussion. The Gemara says, Omer Rav, Mizbeach Shenifgam, if the Mizbeach is damaged, the Mizbeach has to be completely square. We're going to learn further on that one of the things that's active by the Mizbeach is it has to be perfectly square. The stones themselves of the Mizbeach, as we learned before, have to be, as we learned in the previous parak, have to be completely smooth. They can't have any notches or cracks in them. So now, if the Mizbeach was damaged, kol hakodshim shenishchatu sham psulin, all the korbanos that were shefted there in the Azara now become posel, because they can't be offered as long as the Mizbeach is damaged. So Rav says, umikra hoya biyadenu, we had a posik in our hands, meaning we knew of a posik that expresses this idea, ushachnuhu, but Rav says, I forgot what posik that is. So in particular, now the Gemara is going to discuss now the matter of dichui. We have a point that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, that sometimes you have a korban or you have something else for a mitzvah that was usable for it and now became temporarily disqualified, and therefore it doesn't become, and according to some opinions, then it doesn't become nira again, it doesn't become available to use for the mitzvah again. So the Ponim Meiris actually points out that, you know, if the korban was shefted, and then the mizbeach was damaged, then you don't need a posik, then of course dichui would apply. The question is that maybe the mizbeach was already damaged, and then you shefted an animal for a korban, so maybe it should be, it's called dochui meikroi, it was nitcha to begin with, and therefore it should be a dochui meikroi it would be nitcha temporarily. But then it can be chozer v'nira. It can become usable again. So the prison. But Rav is saying that I knew once of a posik that says that it will remain posel and cannot become kosher again. And Rav says I forgot what that posik was. Historically, by the way, we find one time when we know one time when the Mizbeach was damaged, when you have the story in Masech Tzedukah about Tzedukah who was doing Nisach HaMayim and poured the water on his feet. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says over there, everybody pelted them with their Asurigim, and the Gemara mentions over there that they weren't just throwing Asurigim, they were throwing stones as well, and the result was that the Mizbeach was damaged. So the Gemara says over there they had to put in a block of salt, meanwhile, so that at least the Mizbeach wouldn't look blemished, but they couldn't actually bring any korbanos until they had fixed it. Anyway. So Rav says, so there's a posik, but I forgot what the posik is. So the Gemara says, he saw the Rav Kahana, when Rav Kahana went up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara in Bava Kama tells a whole story that there was a Yid who was threatening to master on another Yid, and Rav Kahana and Rav Kahana killed him, whether accidentally or on purpose, different Mephoshim discussed. And Rav told him, you have to go to Eretz Yisrael because you won't be safe over here. You could get arrested by the government for that killing. Anyway, so Rav Kahana went to Eretz Yisrael. There's a whole long story over there of what happened when he came there. In any case, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechel Rav Shimon b'Rebbe, he met up with Rav Shimon, the son of Rebbe, to Ka'amah Mashum Rebbe Shmuel b'Rebbe Yosi, and Rav Shimon was saying in the name of Rebbe Shmuel b'Rebbe Yosi as follows: this same din, Minayim Mizbeach Shenifkam Shekol Hakadoshim Shenishkatu Sham Psulin. How do we know that if the Mizbeach is damaged, then all the korbanos that were shechted there are psul? Because the pasuk says, you build a mizbeach, there's a vachta olavas oilos secha v'as shlomecha. You should shecht on it your oilos and your shlomim. So now, what do you mean? The fact is, you don't shecht on the mizbeach. Okay, we learned yesterday that maybe you could b'dievet shecht about it, but you could b'dievet shecht on it, but it's certainly not the proper place. It's sort of, Tosfos points out the implication that the words v'zavachta olav secha v'shlomecha could suggest that v'chili you should shecht the korbanos on them, and that's certainly not the case. So what does it mean? Ella, so rather the word olav doesn't mean on it, it means because of it. True shalom, v'loy true chaser. It means you can only use the mizbeach. You can only shecht the korbanos when the mizbeach is whole, not when it's blemished. Because then, when it's blemished, when it's damaged, then it's not considered a mizbeach. Because again, one of the things that's absolutely necessary for the mizbeach to be kosher is that it be perfectly square and that the stones of it not have any damage to them. So Omar, so Rav Kahana says, oh, Hainu Kro the ish. This is the pasuk that Rav forgot. Rav had said that he forgot what pasuk. We can learn this from. Well, now we see from what Rav Shimon Berebi was quoting that there is the pasuk. So that's Rav's opinion, and we're saying Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi's opinion as well. However, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Echad Zeva Echad Zeb Psulin. Rabbi Yochanan says that actually either one would be possible. With even korbanos that had not been shechted yet, you have an animal that was supposed to be brought to the korban and has not yet been brought. Then nevertheless, when the mizbeach is damaged, then those korbanos become, when the mizbeach is damaged, those would-be korbanos are possible, and Rabbi Yochanan holds they don't become acceptable again after the mizbeach is fixed. He holds that once it's nidcha, then it's not choyzer v'nira. So whether the korban was already shechted or whether it wasn't shechted yet, then Rabbi Yochanan says that it will be possible. Tosfos does point out that if the person was makdish them before the mizbeach was damaged, if a person is makdish them after the mizbeach is damaged, then Tosfos points out that even Rabbi Yochanan would not hold that's a problem, because he would hold that it's dochui, but he would hold that when you're able to fix the situation, then it's not considered dochui, and here it's not, because it's fairly easy to fix the mizbeach. So in other words, you have three possible cases. You have where the korban was already shechted and the mizbeach was damaged. So there, everybody is saying that the korban is possible, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Then you have where it's where a person was makdish the animal and then the mizbeach was damaged. Rav would hold that is not possible. Rabbi Yochanan holds that it is. And then you have where the mizbeach was damaged, and then you were makdish the animal, and Tosfos is pointing out, even Rabbi Yochanan would say, that once the mizbeach is repaired, then you can bring that animal as a korban. So the Gemara says Mesi. So the Gemara says Mesi. So the Gemara says B'mai Pligi. What's the underlying machlokes? So that Rav Sava Balei Chayim Einu Nidchim. Rav holds that living animals cannot become nidcha. So even though the mizbeach is damaged and you can't bring any korbanos, this is a live animal. It hasn't been shechted yet. Therefore it can't become posel. So as soon as the mizbeach is fixed, you can bring it. Rabbi Yochanan Sava Balei Chayim Nidchim. Rabbi Yochanan holds of the concept of dichui, that once it was already designated as a korban, and now the mizbeach is broken, then even though the mizbeach is now fixed, the dichui doesn't go away, and nevertheless the animal is still possible. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that the animal remains possible for a korban after that. There's a vort on it that says we say in davening Laman Shimcha Hashem Esalach Laveni Ki Rav Hu. The simple meaning is Ki Rav Hu means because our averus are great, but there's also a vort on it that it means that we're asking Hashem, please treat us like Rav and consider that we as Bali Chaim are Einu Nidchin. We can't be permanently rejected even though we've made ourselves possible with our averus, but consider like Rav, we're now we can do children over and be nira v'nidcha, and then be and be, can be chose of a nira, can become acceptable again before Hashem. Okay. So the Gemara says Meisri. I have a contradiction. The contradiction is going to be on Rav. We learn in a Braisa, kol hakodshim shahoyu ad shalem nivna mizbeach. Any kodshim that were already designated as kodshim before the mizbeach was built, va'achatach nivna mizbeach, and then the mizbeach was built, psulin, then those korbanos are posel. Now, the Gemara asks, what do you mean nivna? If the mizbeach hadn't been built yet, if there was no mizbeach yet, duchuyim me'ikra ninu, then those korbanos are nidcha to begin with. When they were makdish them, they couldn't be offered. So again, Tosfa says, given that Rabbi Yochanan at least is going to hold that Rabbi Yochanan at least is going to hold that where the nidcha meikra, Rabbi Yochanan would hold that again, if it's easy to fix, then fine, but otherwise not. So the question is not so much on Rabbi Yochanan, but the question is on Rav, where he's saying that. So you see that when it was nidcha, then it's dochui, and even when the mizbeach is built, it still remains possible to bring it. So how does that fit according to Rav? So the question is really, if the Braisa means that they were makdish an animal before the mizbeach was built, then actually no, the question would be not only on Rav, the question would be on anybody who holds of the entire concept of dichul. So then the question would be really on the question would really be on Rav and on Rabbi Yochanan, because again, Rabbi Yochanan holds at least that where it's dochri me'ikra, that where to begin with the animal was, where he was makdish it, only where he was, that even Rav agrees, even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that if you were makdish the animal after the mizbeach was damaged, then it'll still be kosher as soon as the mizbeach is fixed. So by the same token, over here, if you were makdish the animal and the mizbeach was after and there was no mizbeach at the time, then even Rabbi Yochanan couldn't hold his fossil. So the Braisa can't possibly mean actually nivne before the mizbeach was built, but rather we should say ella actually neras mizbeach. Rather, we have to correct the wording of the Braisa to say that any animals that were designated as kodshim before the mizbeach was destroyed. So in other words, let's say at the end of the first place of Mikdash, a person was makdish an animal, and then the mizbeach was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar and his army. Now therefore, and let's say this animal is still alive when it comes to the second place of Mikdash. So we're saying that there was a postal. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, Neras, if you're talking about that the mizbeach was torn down and they're still alive 70 years later, ha'iskun lahu, the animals are very old already, and an old animal is postal, an old animal is possible as a korban. Tosfos points out that actually there's an interesting medrash that says that the porim, now you have like this, we know from Parashas Nosai that when by the Chanukah Samizdeach, when the Siyam dedicated wagons and oxen to carry the Mishkan, and then each Nosi gave one ox, and then every two Nasiyam gave one wagon, and every Nosi gave one ox, and they used those and they distributed those among Gershon and Merori to carry the parts of the Mishkan. So Medrash says that those porim actually remained alive for hundreds of years, Bederach Nes, and eventually, when the first Beis Hamikdash was built, then Shloima brought them as korbanos. So you see, Tosfos says that animals can be very old and still be brought as korbanos. Tosfos says that was Haras Shah. That was a one-time thing that the Chachamim of that time decided, since Hashem had made a nest for those animals to stay alive so long, then clearly it's meant for them to be brought as korbanos. But ordinarily, an old animal is possible for a korban. So the Braisa can't possibly mean that an animal that a person was makdish shortly before the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and then the Mizbeach was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar's army, and now that animal is still alive decades later, and you can bring and you're saying it's possible because the Mizbeach was destroyed. It's anyway possible because it's old. Ella actually nifkam a Mizbeach. So rather, we have to correct the Braisa again and say that what it's saying is if before the Mizbeach was damaged, v'achatach nifkam a Mizbeach, and then the Mizbeach was damaged, psulin, then those animals that were designated as korbanos before the mizbeach was damaged are now possible. So now that fits well with Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. How is Rav going to explain that, Braisa? So the Gemara answers, V'lav terutzi komatar. It says, listen, as it is anyway, we're having to correct the wording of the Braisa. Ema shenishkatu, so correct another point in it, that not only is the Braisa first of all saying that it was that there's a difference between before and after the Mizbeach was damaged, but don't say shahoyu, that these kodshim were designated as kodshim, but are still alive. Say rather shenishkatu, that they were shechted, and then that's exactly Rav's din, that once they were shechted, and the Mizbeach is damaged, then they become possible, because Rav is going to agree that shechted animals already, then the concept of dichui applies to it. Okay, the Gemara continues. But we have another contradiction on Rav. This time it's a seeming contradiction in Rav's own words. Rav Gidol tells us in the name of Rav, Mizbeach Shenekar, that if the Mizbeach HaPnimi was uprooted from its place, so you don't have it, it's not in its proper place, nevertheless, Maktirin Keturis V'Mekoymo, you can still offer Keturis on the floor where the Mizbeach was. So Bapashtus, then we would assume the same thing is true as far as the Mizbeach HaChitzen. So then Rav seems to be contradicting himself. So here he's saying if the Mizbeach is damaged, then all the Korbanos become possible. Why don't we just say that you could offer it on the space where the Mizbeach would have been? So why is he saying that all the kodshim are automatically possible? It should be the other way around, that you can do them on the floor. So the answer is k'de'omar Rava moidahoyer of Yehuda b'damim, the same way as Rava says, and in a further piece of Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda agrees as far that we're going to learn it tomorrow, Rav Sashan and Daf Samach, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees as far as blood. We're going to discuss the point. Does the whole floor of the Azara have the kedusha of the Mizbeach? Rabbi Yehuda holds that it does, as we're now going to discuss, but nevertheless, he agrees when it comes to sprinkling blood that it has to be done on the Mizbeach itself. So he would say, for example, that you could burn the Emurim anywhere on the floor and it's still kosher, but the sprinkling of the blood definitely has to be done on the Mizbeach. In the same way over here, we can say that Rav would agree, as far as the sprinkling of the blood, that has to be done on an actual Mizbeach. So it's one thing, the Keturah is fine. He can say the Keturah can be offered on the floor, even where there's no Mizbeach HaPnimi over there right now. But the sprinkling of the blood of Korbanos on the Mizbeach HaChitzen, that Rav would agree that there has to be a Mizbeach, therefore, if there's no Mizbeach, and again, when the Mizbeach is damaged, then it's tantamount to there being no Mizbeach, then Rav will have to agree that it is possible in that place. So there is discussion about that point. So we're saying that Rav agrees as far as the sprinkling of the blood that it can't be done when the Mizbeach is damaged. What would we say as far as the burning of the Emurim? Would we say, again, we're saying Rav Yehuda holds that you could burn the Emurim anywhere on the floor. Does that mean that he would hold that even if the Mizbeach is damaged, that you could, let's say you have a korban that the blood was sprinkled and now the Mizbeach is damaged, so now could you burn the Emurim, So now, can you burn the Emurim on the Mizbeach, or even anywhere on the floor? Or would we say that? Or would we say that it's like the Zerut HaSadam, or would it be like the Keturis? So the Tosfos later on in the Sugya and a couple of Dafim says that the Emurim are like the Keturis in that regard. But there are the Zevach Torda and a couple of other Achronim discuss that and say that no, Zerut HaSadam is the matter. It's what makes it allowed that now you can eat it. We're saying that you can't do the zrika when the Mizbeach is damaged, but why shouldn't we say then that the Emurim shouldn't be in the same category? Because after all, you do also need to offer the Emurim in order to be able to eat the meat of the korban. So therefore, it should actually be the same din, that just like you can't sprinkle the blood, as Rav is saying, then you can't burn the Emurim, you can't burn the Emurim either. And in fact, the Sfas Emes points out that Rambam seems to imply like that, and Zevach Torda points out that Rashi seems to also agree that the Emurim are like the blood in that regard. So it would be Macholik, as we're showing him in short, in a case like that, and Mizbeach is damaged, could you burn the Emurim according to Tosfos? Yes. According to Tosfos, yes. According to the implication of Rashi and the Rambam, apparently not. Okay. So the Gemara says, my Rabbi Yehuda. Where do we see Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? That we just said Rabbi Yehuda agrees by the blood, namely, in other words, that he holds up the entire floor of the Azara has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach, but he agrees, but Rava says that Rav will be that Rava says that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that blood has to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. Where does Rabbi Yehuda talk about that? Tosfos, by the way, gets into a long discussion over here that if we're saying over here that when the Mizbeach is damaged, you can't bring korbanos because you have to sprinkle blood on the Mizbeach, then how do we have nowadays that there should be an isser of bringing korbanos outside, that a person should be chayav kardes for bringing korbanos outside the Beis Hamikdash? The general rule, as we're going to learn towards the end of the Masechta, is that only when it's acceptable, only when it could have been offered inside the Azara is a person chayav kardes for doing it outside. And if nowadays we can't because there's no mizbeach and there's no place to sprinkle the blood, then how is a person chayav for shchut echutz? The Tosfos spends a lot of time discussing like that, maybe discussing that point. Maybe indeed a person is chayav kardes only for offering keturas, and we're saying over here that keturas could be offered even if the mizbeach hapnimi is missing. Another possibility could be we're talking about a mincha, because our Gemara is focusing over here on korbanos that are shechted, and Tosfos goes through several possible answers on how we could make it that a person still is chayev for shchut echutz even nowadays. Okay, so getting back to the Gemara, my Rabbi Yehuda, where does Rabbi Yehuda say anything about the floor of the Azara versus the Mizbeach? So we're going to do part of the discussion today. We'll continue it on Daf Samach tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and then eventually we'll get to Rava's point. We'll get back to Rava's point about Rabbi Yehuda agreeing that blood has to be sprinkled on the actual Mizbeach. So like this, Titania, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says in Malachim, when Shlomo did the Chanukah Sabayis of the first Beis Hamikdash, so the Pasuk is by Yemah who Kiddush HaMelech, Toicha Chotzer, the Pasuk actually says Es Toicha Chotzer, whatever, that Shlomo HaMelech made the inside of the Chotzer, meaning the floor of the Chotzer, holy, the Gomer, and he continues, Ki Mizbeach Sha'osa Moshe, because the Mizbeach that Moshe made, or the actual Lashon in the Pasuk is, Mizbeach HaNachosha, Sasha Lifnei Hashem, whatever, Kotan Mehochil, was too small to fit all the korbanos. So what does this mean? So Poshet Pshat, you would learn the words of the Poshet, was saying that the Mizbeach was too small to hold all the korbanos that Shlomo is now bringing for the Chanukah Sabayis, and therefore Shlomo had to make the rest of the floor of the Azara holy. When we say Shlomo himself, by the way, we don't just mean that Shlomo in his capacity as king is all of a sudden announcing a new din. It means that he sat down together with his Beis Din, and they decided that this is what we have to do. Anyway, Dvarim Kiksavim Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that means exactly what it sounds like. The Mizbeach HaNechoshes, which actually means then, in that case, it wouldn't mean the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, it would mean you had the Mizbeach of stones, which was built into the floor, replacing the Mizbeach HaNechoshes that was built in Moshe's time. So in the Mishkan you had the Mizbeach HaNechoshes that was made out of wood and plated with copper. Now in the Beis Hamikdash you have a Mizbeach built of stones, Mizbeach Adama Tasali, and other such psukim. So now though, that Mizbeach was too small to fit all the korbanos that they're bringing on that occasion, and therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, Shlomo and his Beis Din decided that they have to make the entire floor of the Azara have the Kedusha of the Mizbeach so that they would have more room to burn the pieces of the korbanos. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yehuda learns the pasuk. Amar Rabbi Yosi, but Rabbi Yosi says, why wouldn't there have been room? Let's make a calculation. The pasuk says earlier in Malachim, shortly after Shlomo becomes king, he goes to Givon, which is where the Mishkan was located at the time, and they had the Mizbeach over there. They had the Mizbeach that had been built back in Moshe's times and was still in use. Tosfos points out that the pasuk in Malachim doesn't spell that out, but the pasuk in Divrei, the parallel pasukim in Divrei Yomim, do. It says that the Mizbeach and the Choshes that Bezalel had made was still located there in the Mishkan. And it was Mizbeach HaNechoshes, Asher Asa Betzalel, Ben Uri Ben Hur, some Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, and the Pasuk makes it clear over there that Shlomo offered his korbanos on that. Now, the Pasuk says, Elef Olas Yala Shlomo Ala Mizbeach Ahu. Shlomo brought 1,000 korbanos on that Mizbeach in one day. So now the calculation is going to be as follows. The Mizbeach, Rabbi Yossi is saying, the Mizbeach of Moshe's times, which again is still in use in Shlomo's early years, was 5 amas by 5 amas. Now, of that 5 amas surface, you have to deduct 1 ama on each side for the kronos, because you have the protrusions that we talked about in the previous parak that are 1 ama by 1 ama on each corner of the Mizbeach. So you have to subtract a strip of 1 ama all around the Mizbeach for that. Then you have to subtract another strip of 1 ama wide, which is the Mokum Hiluch Ragle HaKoyanim, the walkway for the Koyanim, because the Koyanim have to be able to stand on top of the Mizbeach to be able to tend to the fire and burn the korbanos and other things. So you have altogether, then there's left a space of only 1 ama by 1 ama in the middle, which is the Mokum HaMa'arocha. That is the place where they would have the wood pile and the fire for the Mizbeach, is in that 1 ama by 1 ama. By the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the pieces of wood that they used for the Ma'arocha were 1 am long, because in the Mizbeach, in that Mizbeach, they had to have them no more than 1 am long, otherwise they'd stick out into the Kohanim's walkway, and they kept that same size when they built the Mishmikdash, even though the Mizbeach is a lot larger. Rashi points out, you'd have to ask, I mean, how can 1,000 korbanos be burnt on a Mizbeach in a space of 1 am by 1 am in a day? The answer is, it was an Eish Shel Shamayim, it was a heavenly fire, so therefore it burns things up quickly. So now, Rabbi Yossi says like this, on that Mizbeach in Gibeon, Shlomo was able to bring 1,000 korbanos in one day. Now, when it comes to the Beis Mikdash, it says, Vayizbach Shlomo as Zevach HaShlomo as Shazavach LaShem, that Shlomo offered korbanos Shlomim to Hashem, Boker Esrim Mishnayim Ela, 22,000 cattle, and again, the pasuk goes on to say 120,000 sheep. Now, says Rabbi Yossi, consider the size of the Mizbeach in the Beis Mikdash. We talked about in the previous perek that the Mizbeach was 32 by 32 amas. But that was in the second Beis Mikdash, as we're going to discuss soon further down the Amud. In the first Beis Mikdash, the base of the Mizbeach was 28 by 28 amas, and then it narrowed as you go up, like we talked about previously, so that you come, once you subtract an amma on each side for the Yisod, an amma on each side for the Sovid, an amma on each side for the Kronos, an amma on each side for the Kohanim's walkway, you wind up with an area 20 by 20 amas. And in fact, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim says just that, that the size of the Ma'arocha of the Mizbeach was 20 by 20 amas. So that means, in other words, so you have an area of 400 square amas for the Ma'arocha. So Rabbi Yossi says, "Akshat Magil Cheshbon Olos of a million amas." If you calculate, if you figure out proportionally the number of amas, you have 400 times as much space on the Mizbeach in the first Beis Mikdash as you did from Bezalel's Mizbeach, and you have, consider the number of korbanos, 1,000 versus 142,000. Then what's the problem? Zed Godol Mized comes out the one of Moshe proportionally is larger, because in one amma they're able to do 1,000 amas in one day. So in 400 square amas, they should be able to do 400,000 korbanos in one day. And here the pasuk is saying that they had only 142,000. So what do you mean cotton mehochel? What do you mean it's too small to hold all the korbanos? There is an interesting point, actually, that's made. That, wait a minute, there we're talking about that the ones that he brought in Givon on the old Mizbeach were Olos, and here we're talking about Shlomim, which take up much less space. So you need even less space than that. So how is the Gemara even thinking to compare them? So one interesting answer is actually because unlike with Oilus, where you can just pile one on top of the other, with Shlomim, you can't do that. With Shlomim, the thatch of each one have to be burnt separately, so therefore you need a lot, and therefore you need more space. But still, the objection is that the space you'd need to burn the fat of each Shlomim individually can't be larger than the space it would take to burn an entire animal. So therefore, the Taras HaKodesh explains that's the basis of the question, of Rabbi's question, then is proportionally, it comes, they should have had no problem offering all these 142,000 korbanos on a Mizbeach, which is 400 times, whose Makom HaMa'arocha is 400 times the size of the one in the Midbar. Ela mahu katan mehochel. So rather, Rabbi Yossi says, what does the pasuk mean when it says that the Mizbeach was too small to contain all the korbanos? In Rabbi Yehuda's understanding, he said that Mizbach HaNakoshes means the actual stone Mizbeach, and it's called Mizbach HaNakoshes because replacing the Mizbeach HaNakoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu's times. Now Rabbi Yossi is saying that no, what it means is Mao Cotton, we're talking about actually the original wood and copper Mizbeach. That we're explaining, why did Shlomo not continue using it? Now, he continued using, for example, the same Aron from the Mishkan, and the same Shulchan, and the same Menorah. Why not use the same Mizbeach as well? So, Ka'odim or Omer L'Chaveri, because, like, in other words, when it says Koton Mehochel, it's like a figure of speech. Like a person would say to somebody else, Ploini Nanasu, but Ploini is a short person, is a midget, Opostol La'avoda, and what he means, therefore, what he means, so he means to say by that the person is possible to do the avodah. He doesn't openly want to say that the person is nifsal to that for the avodah. So in other words, a person is talking to somebody else. You want to talk about Yankel, that he's posel to do the avoda. You could flat out say posel avoda, but he might not. He'll say in a nicer way, Yankel is a short guy. Yankel is a midget. And the unnamed listeners will understand that he means to hint by that, that the person is posel to do the avoda. So the same way, in other words, when the posel calls the mizbach anachoshes, kotin mehochu, it's as much as to say that Shlomo declared that mizbeach to be posel, and then instead we're having a mizbach avoni. One obvious reason is because, again, they do have a mitzvah to build a mizbeach avonim. The Shittim HaKubetzes brings another point as well, that Shlomo is basically saying on the spot, listen, the very fact that we see that this mizbeach is not large enough to fit all the korbanos, as the Gemara is going to explain soon how Rabbi Yossi can say that, given Rabbi Yehuda's calculation, we'll talk about that in a minute, but anyway, Rabbi Yossi will say that Shlomo says on the spot, sits down, decides with the Chachamim, you know what, once we found that this mizbeach really is too small for all the korbanos, then on that basis alone, we're going to declare it possible for the future, and instead we're going to have a mizbeach of stone. So the point is, Rabbi Yossi says there's no source in the pasuk for saying that he made the entire floor of the azara kosher for offering korbanos. What the pasuk means is that instead of having that small mizbeach, he had a much larger mizbeach, which takes up more of the floor space. So that's the machlokes. So now let's analyze that. Rabbi Yehuda, Shafir Ka'am Rabbi Yossi. How does Rabbi Yehuda answer Rabbi Yossi's objection? It seems a very good point. Rabbi Yossi's calculation shows that the Mizbeach of the Beis HaMikdash, where again, the first Beis HaMikdash, the Makam HaMa'aracha, was 20 by 20 amas, 400 square amas, should have been more than enough to burn the 142,000 korbanos of that day. Fine, even if you're going to add there were oilus as well, still it doesn't necessarily reach anywhere near the 400,000 that would be the theoretical max. So what is Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his own svara. He learns that actually you have to learn the psukim in Chumash Shmos differently, and that the mizbeach that was built under Moshe's direction was actually larger, as we're going to show now. So now, then Rabbi Yehuda would answer that no, Rabbi Yossi, your calculation is based on assuming that the Mizbeach of Moshe was 5 by 5 amas, and the result is it's Mokam HaMa'aracha is only 1 by 1 amma. But Rabbi Yehuda says, don't learn that way, learn that the Mizbeach was actually larger. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says about the Mizbeach HaChitzen from Moshe's times, Chomish amas Urech v'chomish amas Roicham. It was 5 amas long and 5 amas wide and square. So Dvarim Kiksavan Divrei Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says the pasuk means exactly what it sounds like. The mizbeach was 5 by 5, and then that leads to the whole calculation that we said before. Rabbi Yehuda says no. You can't understand the pasuk to mean that it was 5 by 5 because we have Gzeira Shava. Nema Kan Ravua, the Nema Lahalan Ravua. Because you have Ravua, it says over here by the mizbeach of Moshe, but you also have the mizbeach that Yechezkel describes in his Nevuah, which would have been in the second Beis HaMikdash if they had been Zoicha, and in the end is going to be in the third Beis HaMikdash. He describes a blueprint of the mizbeach, and he also uses the word Ravua over there. When we talked about in the previous parak about the Mizbeach being 32 by 32, that was based on Yechezkel's blueprint. They followed that almost exactly when it came to building the second Beis HaMikdash, with the exception that in Yechezkel's description, the Yesod is 2 amas high, and in the Beis HaMikdash, in the second Beis HaMikdash, it was 1 amma high. So Yechezkel describes it like this. He says that he describes the Mokam HaMa'aracha, the area which is available for bruning the korbanos on the top of the Mizbeach. He describes it as Shtein Esrei, he describes it as 12 by 12 Ravua. Now, what does that mean? He doesn't mean it's only 12 by 12. We learn of Zeta Shava as follows. Now, it's not a true Zeta Shava. The Mitzvah Esan point in the back of the Gemara points out you can't actually learn a real true Zeta Shava from Chumash to Nevi'im. So it's not really Zeta Shava. It's more Gil, Rabbi Yehuda would call it Gilui Milsa Ba'alma. It's revealing to us the meaning of the word Ravua in connection with Moshe's Mizbech. So Malahalan meant to Isir Hoyamoidin. When Yechezkel says 12 by 12, he doesn't mean an actual square of 12 by 12 and no more than that. He means that you measure from the midpoint of the Mizbeach 12 amas in every direction. So therefore, it comes to 24 by 24. Afkan meant to Isir Hoyamoidin. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says the same way when it says by Moshe's Mizbeach that it was 5 by 5, it doesn't mean 5 by 5 only. It means you would measure from the midpoint of the Mizbeach 5 amas in each direction. In other words, according to him, the Mizbeach was, the Mizbeach of Moshe's times was 10 by 10 amas. So again, once you subtract the area for the kronos and the area for the kohen's walkway that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have an area for the makom ha'maracha, not one by one amma, as Rabbi Yossi had said, but rather 6 by 6 ammas, 36 square ammas. So now, says Rabbi Yehuda, let's revisit that calculation. The makom ha'maracha of Moshe's mizbeach then, Rabbi Yehuda says, was 36 square amas. The one in the Beis Hamikdash was 400 square amas. So it's a little over 11 times as much. 36 times 11 is 396. You have a little more than 11 times as much. How many korbanos are you bringing? On the mizbeach in Gibeon, Shlomo was able to bring 1,000 korbanos in one day. Here we're saying there's at least 142,000 korbanos. So it's more than 140 times as much. So then yes, you're not going to be able to fit that in a mizbeach where the makom ha'maracha is only a little more than 11 times larger. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Rabbi Yossi, your calculation was based on assuming that the makom ha'maracha of Moshe's mizbeach was only an amma by an amma, and therefore you made the calculation work. But no, it's not like that. It was actually 6 by 6 ammas, and therefore it wouldn't work out. And that is why, says Rabbi Yehuda, that Shlomo had his base had to declare the floor of the Azara to also have the Kedusha of the Mizbeach, because otherwise there physically wouldn't be enough room to bring all the Korbanos. And again, here's where the Taras HaKodesh points out, even you're going to say that here we're talking about only Shlomim. First of all, there must have been Olus as well, but second of all, again, Shlomim, they have to burn the fat of each one individually, and they can't pile them up on top of each other like they might do with an Ola, and therefore it's going to take more, and therefore it's going to take space. So the Gemara says v'hosim enolon. Okay, when it comes to Yechezkel's mizbeach, how taka do we know that he means to measure from the middle? So d'chtim, like this, the pasuk says v'ho ariel, the ariel, which means the makom ha'maracha. It's called ariel because the fire min hashemayim was in the shape of a lion. Ariel literally means the lion of Hashem. So the Ariel, Shtem Esrei Orech, the Ariel was 12 Amas. The actual pasuk is Shtem Esrei Orech, Shtem Esrei Roichav. So this means L'chol Ruach. So the Braisa says this means in every direction. It means that you measure it from the middle, 12 Amas in every direction. How do you know? Oyeina El Shtem Esrei Al Shtem Esrei. Maybe the pasuk means that it's actually only 12 by 12. But no, true Oyeina El Abbas Revav, the pasuk continues to its four quarters. So that means, so it's not just that it's a square 12 by 12, it means each quarter of it is 12 by 12. Malamach and the Emsa Humoded, you learn from that you measure from the middle, and you have four quarters of the Mizbeach, each of which is 12 by 12, and the result is the whole thing is 24 by 24, and again, that's only the Makom HaMaracha. Once you add the place of the Kohanim's walkway, and the Kronos, and the Sovim, and the Yisoid, then you get to the 32 by 32 that we learned in the previous Tehillim. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says we're making a Gzeira Shava, or fine, a Gula Milsa Ba'alma, from that to say that the same thing with the Mizbeach that was built under Moshe's direction was also, when it says 5 by 5, it really means 10 by 10, and therefore that the Makom HaMaracha was a lot larger than Rabbi Yossi makes it to be. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, so what would Rabbi Yossi answer to that? He says, Ki Gomer Gzeira Shava B'Goybo Hu Gomer. He says, at the Gzeira Shava, I agree to the Gzeira Shava, or Gilui Milsa Ba'alma, but he says, I'm going to use the Gzeira Shava to tell us about the height of the Mizbeach. Not about the width of it, but about the height. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in another Braisa. The Pasuk says, in describing Moshe's Mizbeach, it says, B'sholosh Amos Toimosai, that it was 3 Amos tall. Now, what does that mean? Dvarim Kiksavim Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that means exactly what it sounds like. The Mizbeach in the Mishkan was only 3 Amos tall. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Nemakan Ravua, but Nemalahal and Ravua. Again, we have the word Ravua in the Pasuk, in Parshas Truma, about the Mizbeach of the Mishkan. We have the word Ravua in the Pasuk from Yechezkel. So, Malahal and Goyv HaPishnaim Ka'orkoi. So now, Rabbi Yossi says like this, the Mizbeach that Yechezkel describes, he's learning not from Ravua, he's not learning from the Ravua of Yechezkel's Mizbeach, rather he's learning from a different Ravua where it says by the Mizbeach HaPnimi, by the Mizbeach HaZahav, it also says that it was Ravua. Now, Mala Halam, Goyve Pishnaim Ka'orkoi, now when it comes to the Mizbeach HaPnimi, it was 1 Amma by 1 Amma, and it was 2 Ammas tall. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, we can learn from that, Afkan, Goyve, Afkan, Pishnaim Ka'orkoi, the same way over here, the Mizbeach HaChitzen has to be the same proportions, twice as high as it is wide. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, that the Mizbeach was 5 by 5, because he didn't learn from the Mizbeach of Yechezkel that we're measuring from the middle, like Rabbi Yehuda does. He says it just means it was 5 by 5. And therefore, learning from the proportions of the Mizbeach HaPnimi would mean that it was 10 amas tall, not that it was only 5. Not that it was only 3, like Rabbi Yehuda says. So the Gemara's later on is going to explain that what does Rabbi Yossi do with the words to be honest? He says it means from the soviv upward, from the soviv was six amas above the floor, then you have three amas from there to the top of the mizbeach, and then the tenth amma is made up of the kronos. So he'll learn that b'shalosh amas kemasei means that part of the mizbeach, but you also have the yisod and the soviv beneath it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is holding that the one in the mishkan was three amas. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, where Rabbi Yehuda is going to point out to Rabbi Yossi that doesn't seem to work to have the mizbeach be only three amas tall, and we're going to continue the discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and then we'll eventually get back to the point that we brought this all in for, to point out that Rabbi Yehuda, even though Rabbi Yehuda holds that the floor of the Azara has the kedusha of the mizbeach, nevertheless he'll agree that blood has to be sprinkled on the actual mizbeach. So far, in other words, we have three different interrelated machlokes in between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Number one, what does the pasuk in Malachim mean? Does it mean that the floor of the Azara has the kedusha of the mizbeach, or does it mean, which is according to Rabbi Yehuda, or does it mean that Shlomo passed the original mizbeach because it is physically too small, or because it has to be replaced by a mizbeach of stone anyhow, and therefore the floor of the Azara does not in fact have the kedusha of the mizbeach? That's Rabbi Yossi's position. Number two, what was the size, the surface area of the mizbeach in the Mishkan? Was it 5 by 5 amos leading to that there's a makom ha'maracha of only 1 by 1 amma, which is according to Rabbi Yossi? Or was it 10 by 10 amos and the makom ha'maracha was 6 by 6 according to Rabbi Yehuda? And the third thing is how tall was the mizbeach in the desert in the Mishkan? Was it 3 amos tall according to Rabbi Yehuda, or was it 10 amos tall according to Rabbi Yossi? And then again, we'll continue tomorrow. The Gemara is going to bring a discussion between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi about whether, in fact, the mizbeach can have been 10 amos tall, or was it in fact 3.